You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's 5 o'clock refresh. It's brought to you by Frostproof Coors Light. And Seattle Mariners get the day off. They are busy campaigning. I saw a picture of them on their way down to Los Angeles or to Anaheim. And everybody's wearing Sin Segura t-shirts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Everybody kind of chipping in. I saw Nelson Cruz is offering as an autographed bat for as a prize for people who show that they have. I'm not sure how he's determining which person gets the bat for people who participate in voting him in there. And really, as excited as everyone was for both Mitch Haniger and Edwin Diaz, who were first-time All-Star selections, as well as for Nelson Cruz, who's going to make the All-Star game for the third time as a Mariner, sixth time overall. There was some disappointment that Gene Segura was not among those chosen. Here's Scott Servais after the announcements were made.
Quite frankly, just shocked as much as anything that Gene Segura wasn't on it. But there's a lot of good players in the league. Certainly shortstop is a position that has, you know, got guys having great years. But it's really hard to hit 330 in this league. It's hard to hit 330 for 2 weeks, let alone half a season. Gene's just been unbelievable. I thought what he did today defensively, I've said it all season, it goes under the radar. People don't know what a job he's done defensively. And
yeah, you know what? I would say the defensive part of it might be, though, maybe why he didn't get in. First of all, look, it sucks that he bats 330 and he's not in the All-Star game. But if you look at Manny Machado, he's got 21 home runs. He's only got 8 errors. Segura had 11 errors. He's got a better fielding percentage and the power, and only 7 home runs for Segura. And, you know, I think Servais or somebody was mentioning that, you know, there's some power hitters at shortstop. I think it was Shannon Dreher.
Yeah, like Lindor's got over 20 home runs.
Yeah, Lindor's at 23. And then, so, you know, and then you've got some really good defensive guys. Andrelton Simmons probably feels snubbed a little bit too, the shortstop for the Angels. He only had 5 errors, but he's only got 6 home runs. So, you know, I would say Machado is, there would be more of a national outcry if he wasn't in there than Gene Segura. But for Mariner fans, it really sucks. And I'm bummed out for him, because this is something that you dream of as a little kid, that, you know, to be an All-Star. And he puts up those numbers and means that much to this team. And he's not in. I mean, I know that there's still a chance, right? And that's what we're trying to get the campaign going here for.
Hashtag send Segura, and you can vote. The Mariners have been pumping out that website all day and different places where you can vote to get him voted in as one of the last guys in, and then there'll be injuries, and he very well could find himself there. And unless this creates some sort of disappointment or casts a shadow over what Segura's been doing, if this made him feel or somehow affected his performance, we're really talking about recognition. We're not talking about anything more than that. But I totally understand how Gene Segura would feel right now, which is, hey, man, I'm bummed out. And I feel that what I did certainly merited inclusion in the All-Star game, because Edwin Diaz is obviously there as the major, the number of saves that he's racked up, a near historic pace that he's on, and their record in 1- and 2-run games, that's a reflection of him. But in my mind, the number two guy that should have gone to the All-Star game is Gene Segura, and that's independent of position, but just what he's meant to this team. When Cano went out with a suspension, I mean, he's been their best hitter, in my opinion. Haniger's had more home runs, but Haniger's also struck out a lot more. And Segura's been the guy that's kind of that lightning rod at the top. And how many times has he been able to hook up with D. Gordon? He's made D. Gordon's presence at the top and ability to get on. In my mind, Segura has been their best guy at the plate for the first half of the season. So while I get the explanation that, well, Machado's the starter and Lindor's going to be there, and look, Andrelton Simmons consideration, Carlos Correa of the Astros is having a little bit of an off year, but it's a stacked position. I'm also like, dude, he's hitting 330. He's got the second most hits in the league. How's that guy not on the All-Star team? Like, only carry one first baseman. Abreu, who was there? Like, nobody needs to see Mitch Moreland in the All-Star game.
Right.
Like, between those two guys, who's having more of an All-Star season? It's Gene Segura that's there, but because of the way things... Salvador Perez. Hey, put catcher's equipment on Gene Segura and let him catch for an inning or two, if that's what it comes down to. But let's go.
Yeah, just as long as he has it in on his mantle, you know. That's Abreu. I was looking up his numbers and like how close Ryan Healy would be to him, and you know, and I guess the fielding numbers were better, but and he had a better average, but 50 RBIs for Abreu and 46 for Ryan Healy. And Healy's got 18 home runs and only 12 home runs for Abreu, although he has 27 doubles, Abreu does. But, you know, it's like a guy, do we really need to see him in there? Yeah, probably not. I don't – you know, it's funny, and I'll admit to this, I never noticed that in the All-Star game that there needed to be a representative from every player. Just because coming from football, it's just – I don't know. It should be the best players. It shouldn't be – and if you're a player – it's like you're the king of Poop Hill, right? I mean, if you're the best player on the worst team and you're getting in there, I mean, that's – I don't know how I would feel about that as a player. Wouldn't you go and be – you're in the dugout and like, eh, hey, guys, I know I'm not at the same level as all you guys, but, you know, here I am because I'm representing my crummy team.
Yeah, it's a strange thing that's hung around. And baseball's got a lot of odd things, like we've determined, right, that you can swing and miss at a strike three and still get on base if the catcher doesn't catch the ball.
A coach wears the same uniform.
Yeah, and I think that this would be it. Like, all teams must – there's a little socialist republic of Major League Baseball where all 30 teams will be represented there. And it's a strange thing to think that in a day where it's a showcase event for everybody, that you would have these sort of little special exemptions to make sure that the Kansas City Royals did in fact have someone coming there, because, man, everybody knows that people in Kansas City, they really want to watch the All-Star game when they're suffering through a season in which they've won, what, like 35 games so far? But, man, they're going to tune in to watch Salvador Perez, who's been hitting .217.
Even though they know he shouldn't – he doesn't really belong there. But I don't know, maybe Jim's right, because his point on that was that, look, you know, people in those nationally or baseball cities, they want to see their own get in there. But I just, yeah, I'm not for that. The guy that I thought was going to get snubbed possibly would be Haniger.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, I thought just because of name recognition and that maybe people around the league aren't noticing what he's doing. But man, you look at especially the RBIs, just fantastic. 62 puts him at like eighth in all of baseball. So, and he's been really good. I was really happy to see him get the nod there, because I feel like he's one of those guys that could have possibly flown under the radar. He's sixth right now. He's tied with guys like Encarnacion, Jed Lowry, who's having a really good year. There's another guy that kind of got screwed a little bit, Jed Lowry. Mm-hmm. He's not going to make the All-Star team. He's a second baseman who's been around for a long time. But, you know, Evan Gattis, Trevor Story, those are the kinds of RBI numbers that Mitch Haniger has right now.
One of the other things that happened over the weekend, I opened the paper yesterday, the Seattle Times had listed the 10 most important Seattle sports athletes. And at the top of the list is a guy that I think that nobody would dispute.
And the pitch to Junior on the way. Swing and a fly ball into deep right center field. That baby is going to be fly away. The all-time religion lives. Junior does it. A two-run home run. And we are tied at 3-3. My, oh, my. Magic is back at least for a night.
And I think Ken Griffey Jr. being there, even though he did exit Seattle at one point in his career, it was where he started with. He was our first national superstar, a guy that was an MVP. Nike had a spoof of a presidential campaign for him, Vote Griffey, I believe that was. He was an absolute superstar that was here. I think that he was there a little bit down on the list. Number nine was someone who I think that his significance here. There's no doubt that this guy should be there as well.
Terrence Long is lead over at first. Here comes a 3-2 pitch on the way. Swung on and a ground ball punched into right field for a base hit. So heading to third base is Long. The throw to third base, and they've got him nailed at third base on a tremendous throw by Ichiro. I'm here to tell you that Ichiro threw something out of Star Wars down there at third base. He fired a shot about 3 feet off the ground all the way on the fly to David Bell, and Terrence Long was D-O-A.
And then
I challenge you to ever listen to that clip and not smile.
It's great.
Especially the way he ends it there at the end.
D-O-A that was there. And then somewhere in that list of 10 was this guy.
Ozzy does nice getting around Valeri. Finds Roldan. They're on the move. Clint Dempsey, top of the 18. Left foot again. Back in the net.
Listen to Matt Stretch Johnson there.
I know. He got into it.
Oh, my gosh. He sounds great.
What's Clint Dempsey doing on this list?
Well, I mean, look, I felt like Condota, he sort of picked someone from every sport. Because you got a college guy in there and Steve Entman. Now, you are doubled up, although Warren Moon did play for the Seahawks as well. But you got Warren Moon in there. You have somebody from soccer. You have somebody from the Storm. You have Lenny Wilkins in there. And so, yeah, I mean, it's Sue Bird.
Sue Bird's
there. You know, that's the other one. I'm not a soccer fan. And for our listeners, and I have people asking me this all the time, why don't you guys talk about soccer? They don't listen. Soccer fans are not our listeners. And so, yeah, you end up not paying that much attention to it. But boy, the group of people that do follow it are incredibly dedicated.
What I wondered about it, because you're absolutely right about that, and the attendance that's at soccer matches and Sounders matches certainly speaks to the appetite for it. And I can totally see putting someone from that franchise or from that sport on the list. I guess my question was about Dempsey, because I don't feel that Dempsey has resonated here in that way. That I feel that Dempsey was someone who was an incredibly prominent player who was brought here, and it was a major move for the league to get him here. And I think they paid him like $8 million a year, 4 years, $32 million. Like, here was a guy that was playing at a really high level in Europe coming. But in terms of how he didn't win a championship for Seattle, because I think that he was injured at the time. Like, the fact of where, and he didn't score game-winning goals for Seattle. Like, he wasn't like Richard Sherman was for the Seahawks. And Russell Wilson and Steve Largent were the two guys from the Seahawks franchise. That there was, I don't see him as that pivotal. He is not the Sounders Ken Griffey Jr., Clint Dempsey. And I guess that's what I would think. And I was actually, and not entirely joking, when I thought, if you're going to put a soccer player on there, Hope Solo. Like, Hope Solo is a more prominent local player and gone on and accomplished everything with the gold medal. And there's some baggage there with her relationship with Jeremy Stevens and some of those, the other things that go along that. I felt that. I also found myself at Lenny Wilkins being included, that Lenny Wilkins, as much as you get him in as a player and then his contributions as a coach for the first championship team, I think you might have to put Dennis Johnson on that list. If you're going to go the 10 most, like the best player, the guy that won the finals MVP in the 1 year that they won the title, that he would be on there. It's an interesting exercise, though, to think about who the 10 most important athletes are. Walter Jones, if you'd say, like, is Walter's the best football player ever to play for the Seattle Seahawks?
Do you think? I mean, he put Steve Largent in there. And
which I get, because, man, Largent was incredible.
I think the thing with Steve is that if Steve Largent was a 6'3" guy who could fly, you know, kind of like Rabel used to be able to. Rabel was really fast. No, but, I mean, he's just a crafty little guy. I don't know if this is for sure true, but I'm pretty sure that, like, when I was at my fastest, I could run faster than Steve Largent. I mean, he wasn't faster than most linebackers, but he was so good. He was such a good player. But, you know, you use the word important, and that's where I think Condota went. Like, Steve Entman, I mean, that guy was really important to that team that won a national championship, you know, and he was a really good, really good college player and just never made it in the NFL. But as far as, you know, you could also throw in there, and one person I thought of, and this has nothing really to do with what he did on the field, but Boz, as far as importance and bringing this. And when you mentioned Ken Griffey Jr., I kind of thought, like, Ken Griffey Jr. was sort of a pop culture icon, like with the hat on backwards, and he was just cool. And I don't think he was trying to do that, but he was a really good player who brought a lot of attention here. And for that same reason, as far as importance goes, I would bring up Richard Sherman too, just because, you know, those kinds of players are what put you on the map. Ken Griffey Jr. does, you know, probably not Steve Largent, right? But Richard Sherman does. And, you know, the "you mad bro" thing, the whole everything that Richard Sherman did, you know, and that's where, you know, when you go importance versus whether somebody's a good player or not, you can get you know, everybody has a different opinion. It just brings up a lot of good conversation. I like all of the people that Bob Condotta picked, but I mean, I wouldn't pick a soccer player if I went the top 10, you know, and I probably wouldn't pick somebody from the Storm either.
Yeah, and that was the other, Sue Bird, her legacy here and how long she's played here. But Lauren Jackson was the best player on the Storm team that won the title. And Lauren Jackson, all the points she scored. And Sue Bird passed her in career scoring over the weekend. I did come away when if there was one feeling was that probably Lenny Wilkins probably shouldn't have been on there. Probably Dennis Johnson. I think I'd move the soccer player out and I'd put in either Richard Sherman or Marshawn Lynch. And I don't know which. I'm not sure which. If I was going to say the 100 most important athletes or the 10 most important athletes in Seattle sports history, who was more important to the Seahawks Super Bowl run? Was it Marshawn or was it Sherman? And I could probably go back and forth all day on those. I think ultimately I ended up coming down that it was Sherman because of the tip, the play that he made, the prominence that he carried them to, and then the fact that the way it ended for him here in Seattle, it wasn't kind of like he stepped out of town. Like the team decided to move on. He didn't decide to move on. Whereas with Marshawn, and I do think that matters. I do think like your legacy and importance in a town, how you leave matters. And Griffey's the one exception. And I will say this, that I am completely culpable of having a double standard that it doesn't bother me that Griffey asked out of town and left. It doesn't, like maybe it's because I've got such a codependent relationship with him. Like I love how much he loved Seattle and I love how much he wanted to be loved by Seattle. Like I loved all of those things about it that I'm willing to, I'll just forget about that time he ended up wanting to go to Cincinnati. I will completely overlook that part.
Do you think that'll happen to you? For you with Richard Sherman? I mean, and same with Marshawn Lynch. There's another guy that did not leave here. By the way, I want to give a shout out to my guy, Cortez Kennedy. Somebody texted that in. There's another guy that really, you know, was a really good player during a time that was down. But, you know, Marshawn left on a bad note. Richard Sherman left on a bad note. Michael Bennett. But, yeah, those will be forgotten, just like you with Ken Griffey Jr. Enough times passed. Do you remember how badly people hated Brett Favre when he left Green Bay and went to Minnesota? And sure enough, we saw it just a few years ago. Wasn't he out on the field with Bart Starr? And everybody loves him and everything. And so you forget about all that stuff. The other thing is players mellow as they with age. And, you know, maybe Marshawn Lynch comes back here at age 38, 40, whatever, and he's a kinder, gentler Marshawn Lynch, doesn't have that edge. Same thing with Richard Sherman. And those guys will, you know, they mean so much to this team. But I'm going to answer, I would go Marshawn. If you asked me which one was more important in that Super Bowl run, I thought he was everything. And I think the best evidence of that is how Russell played last year really well, but they couldn't win because they didn't have a running game. And Marshawn really provided that. And it was behind an offensive lineman I know they spent a lot of money on, but the revisionist history is always funny to me when you look back. That was not the greatest offensive line, and there was lots of complaining about it. I thought really what made it happen was Marshawn Lynch.
No doubt about that. This is sort of the fundamental riddle or what paradox about the Seahawks is that Russell Wilson's the most important player on this team, and he will be the guy that whenever we're done, he's the only one that has a chance to pass Griffey as the most important athlete in Seattle sports history, but he wasn't the most important player on that Super Bowl team. In fact, he might not have been one of the three or four most important. Like if you sat there and looked at how it all played out, Marshawn, Sherman, Cam, the different guys that they had there. And I think in some ways it might be the only time that a quarterback has been underrated, the contributions, because he was a heck of it. He had an incredible season. Like remember the game he had against Houston and even games that you would look at and think that, and there were games that he won just by virtue of his ability to pull a victory out of thin air. But you go back and look at it and I'm like, if you're going to give an MVP, he's not even really one that I would consider as a good candidate. I would certainly see him as behind both Sherman and Marshawn and probably behind either Earl or Cam.
Yeah, well, and I wonder if that's going to be a problem down the road because look at last year. And again, they can't win without a running game. And so really what they need from Russell Wilson is to not have the stats that he's had. I just remember during that run that they had, were there 10 or 5 straight years of double-digit wins and going to the playoffs, you would see Russell 19 for 26 for 250 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, that was an awesome day for him. And you saw the stats last year, statistically, threw the most touchdowns. And when you ask him to do that much, it's almost like you don't want that from him. And so down the road, it's like he's not really the most important player. It's going to end up being somebody, you know, maybe it'll be Chris Carson, maybe it's Rashad Penny, but he's a guy that is an absolute superstar. But it just seems like every time that you have to, in this system, put that much on him, that he gets overwhelmed and ends up making, you know, some bad decisions, even though his stats were really good.
That is Danny David Moore. Who would you include on that list of the 10 most important athletes in Seattle sports history? You can text in right now to 710-710. That's our Coors Light text line. Coming up next, the Mariners, they salvaged the series against Colorado, but they're starting to miss Robinson Cano. We'll tell you how we know that next.
This is Danny David Moore
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
The Mariners have been able to succeed in spite of Robinson Cano's absence. That's not because they've replaced his production. It's because they've gotten great starting pitching. And the fact that they missed their second baseman, that's kind of becoming more evident over the course of, well, the past week, certainly, and even really the past 2 months, that this went from being one of the best offenses in baseball to an offense that's good but can go stagnant. And I think that's what we saw against Colorado over the weekend. A single run on Friday, a single run on Saturday, and then, well, if it wasn't for Ryan Healy, it very well could have been a single run on Sunday. He had a couple of a two-out, bases-loaded double. That was in the first inning, and then he also put them ahead later with a three-run homer in the third. And it looks like this is a team that just doesn't have its best hitter, which it doesn't with Robinson Cano out.
Yeah, and like you said, in the one win, five RBIs from Ryan Healy, and they end up winning 6-4. So how about the range, though, with Robinson Cano? I mean, that play in the eighth inning against the Angels a few nights ago that D. Gordon made.
Out of nowhere.
And you see, I mean, and that's something that I was talking to Brent Stecker from 710sports.com about. Like, that's something that, of all the things that you can measure in baseball, you can measure, it's the most measurable sport. You have, like, some kind of an acronym for every single thing there is. But range is one that you really can't measure. And so, like, for a pitcher's ERA, I mean, that kind of range that you get from D. Gordon, I mean, look, that's something that you can't measure. Nobody else gets to that ball. So as far as him coming back defensively, I don't know that you get better. I think D. Gordon's good enough at second base to match anything that Cano can do and more. And it's not like you're hurting for range in the outfield. So that part of it, that's where I kind of, you know, we talk about when Robinson Cano comes back, whether or not, you know, it's going to be the best thing to move him right back into the lineup. I don't know. But the steady bat, you know, and I said earlier, you look, he's not like a big power hitter. And at one point, he was considered to be a power hitting second baseman. But I just feel like since he's gotten here, it's not really been. I mean, and he was in the home run derby. And I always thought that was kind of weird. I felt like that he was sort of out of place, like if Ichiro were to go. But just because you think of guys like Cruz. But no, he was a power hitting second baseman. So you could pretty much get anything that you wanted out of Robinson Cano. He's like probably the most well put together player that you have that can both hit and field, and just the smoothness, and, you know, he doesn't make a lot of errors. You're not going to see him diving for balls like D. Gordon, but he's going to get there and he's always going to make the play. So it's going to be very interesting to see what, and I don't think, Danny, and I know I haven't heard you mention it, but we haven't really talked about his absence until now. But I agree with Jim. I think this Colorado Rocky team's pretty good. They're a couple games above 500. They're in a tough division, the NL West, and, you know, they got some good players like Nolan Arenado and Blackman. I mean, I thought it was just a good test for them.
I totally agree. It is a good Colorado team, and it was a team that started off hot, and they are. I mean, right there, the Diamondbacks are also really good in that division. The Dodgers obviously loaded up with a huge payroll that are there. I think I looked at it more just what you see from the Mariners lineup. And when Haniger was out on Friday and Saturday with the bruised knee, you start to look at it and you're like, you feel the absence more. Like, and maybe that's what it is, that you've lost any buffer that you go, because I haven't thought of the Mariners lineup as being weak without Cano. But then you see him score one run in a couple games, and you realize, man, Denard Span is sitting there hitting third. That's what they move up in the interim, and you're all of a sudden, okay, this lineup looks significantly different. Seager's hit a little better for the past couple weeks. Nelson Cruz is having and returning to the form that he has after a difficult early season with all of the bumps and bruises. But this isn't going to be a situation. They're going to want and need Robinson Cano's bat back in the lineup. And I don't think you get it back there by just putting him at second base the whole time. I think, as Jerry DePoto has kind of hinted to a reporter, that maybe it's more of a timeshare at second base. But you're also going to see, I would bet that Robinson Cano plays some first base and probably DHs some as well. But his lineup, his bat is going to be in that lineup every day. He's not going to be taking a playing every other day sort of approach.
Yeah, and I hope that's the way they handle it, I guess, just because if you get him settled into one spot, maybe it will be, maybe it won't be. But I always think of it as being maybe a little bit too much of a shock of going back to that, because you're not going to have him for the playoffs. And I'm, of course, dreaming big right now and assuming that they're going to make the playoffs, and you don't get him for the playoffs. So if you are moving him around in different spots, at least you're used to rotating different guys in there, and it's not like he's going to sit and occupy one spot, second base, for instance, and then all of a sudden, you know, you throw D. Gordon in there and put somebody else back out in the outfield. What was the stat you had earlier? You had a quiz about Denard Span?
The player, the active player with the most hits who has not been to an All-Star game. And that came up because Nick Markakis was among the top guys in that category. I think he was third, the third most hits. The player with the most hits, the active player with the most hits who has never made an All-Star game is now Denard Span. Like, that's the guy that is that, I guess, that distinction. It's kind of like the best golfer never to win a major.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the NBA, you would have best player who has not appeared in a playoff series for a long time. That was Jamal Crawford. That sort of thing. And Denard Span has been great since he's gotten here.
Were you able to stump C-Raj on that one, Danny?
No, it took C-Raj a little bit, but he eventually got it. The mega brain that is Curtis Rogers. I almost called you Carlos Rogers. Do you remember him from Middle Tennessee State?
Yeah, the cornerback?
No. There's an older Carlos Rogers.
Oh, geez.
Who was drafted out of, I believe, Middle Tennessee State by the Golden State Warriors. Yeah, that was part of the forgettable 20 years of Warrior fandom between Run TMC and the championship team that they had.
I love Span. We've talked to him, a great guy as well. But remember when he came over in the trade, and now all of a sudden that trade's starting to come into focus, because what we got from Colome the other night, or yesterday, I mean, and six straight strikeouts for Colome in the eighth, and they faced good batters too. I'm trying to remember. I think they faced Blackman and Arenado. So Colome had Tapia, LeMahieu, and then Blackman, and then Diaz. I can't remember who he struck out, but so now all of a sudden Colome's starting to look, over the weekend, look like he's becoming pretty comfortable. And then, man, you look at Span. Remember when they traded for him, we're going, yeah, he's like a 258, 260 hitter, and he was batting like 230. He's 311 since becoming a Mariner. 311, his range has been good, six doubles, four home runs and 12 RBIs in 33 games. And so now all of a sudden, if Colome can continue to throw smoke like he is, you're going to start looking at that trade going, maybe that was probably not better than Haniger and Segura, considering Haniger's an all-star and Segura should have been, but it's looking pretty good right now.
That when they acquired him, I wondered if Span was cooked, if he was a player who was sort of approaching the end of his shelf life as a serviceable everyday major league player. It would have been the second time, because he had been with the Giants before that, and they had moved on from him, and that was a Giants team that was then playing Austin Jackson in the outfield. Like, I really wondered. I was like, okay, there might be a point where he's not an everyday baseball player. He's not an everyday outfielder, and that he's really going to be sort of a fourth outfielder, which ideally you'd like someone to have more speed. But with them moving D. Gordon, you're getting a guy that you know is a, or hope is still, a competent major league bat. And it's turned out to be that there's a lot of life left in Denard Span. And he's been really good. And he's been an asset there. And now the question isn't whether, boy, is he going to be the guy that steps in for Ben Gamel? It's going to be the, can you play him in left field, Gamel in right, and Haniger in center here? How often can you do that over the next few weeks? But all of a sudden, Heredia had a couple good hits too, and good at bats. I've thought Denard Span, but you're right about Colome. That to me was the biggest thing about yesterday's game. Yeah. I think Healy was awesome, and the big hits he had. But Colomé coming in and looking, he had some trouble early. Some of that was because he kept facing the Rays, the team that he came from. Yeah. But it was also he hadn't looked like he looked yesterday. And now that's been a couple straight outings where you've felt that he looks that kind of dominating stuff.
It's pretty amazing what they've been able to do. Not only DePoto seeing this, but Service working these guys in. So to put D. Gordon in there, who was a second baseman, and they coerce him to come here and play center field. He's okay with that. He's fine. He's got a great attitude. Denard Span, I mean, after you said he's been bouncing around, was he in Minnesota?
Minnesota.
I know he's with the Nationals.
Bulk of his career, that and the Nationals
as well. And he's from Tampa. So he was playing at home, and you get him to leave his home. I mean, that was like an ideal situation for him. Was he 34, 35 years old? Probably thinking, hey, I'm going to retire here at home. And he comes in here, and he's got a great attitude. And then Colomé, who has the number of saves in the AL last year, was at 47 as a closer, and you convince him to be like a setup guy. It's amazing what, because you would think that they would go, no, I'm not going to be in on this. They're going to have a bad attitude, and there's been none of that from any of those three players. And I think that's one where you have to credit certainly Jerry DePoto on his vision to see that was capable of doing that, but also Service working them in every day.
Absolutely. Service is kind of the guy that has to get them prepared for what is a role that's outside of what their experience has been, or maybe what their spot has been in the pecking order in the past. It is Danny Davenport with 5 o'clock Refresh, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. We got an opportunity for you to win season tickets to the Seahawks. It's as cool as it sounds. We'll explain a little bit more about that next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Before we start here, I do want to offer thanks to all of you for listening to our show. And that comes up tomorrow is 710 Day. And each year we go out to Druids Glen. I'm going to be golfing in the morning. We're going to be doing our show from out there tomorrow afternoon in Covington. And it's our opportunity, and I guess we think of it as giving back to you. We're really grateful for the opportunity to do this each and every day, and it only works because you guys apparently enjoy listening to us. So I always feel mildly surprised, but really, really grateful for that each and every time. So I want to say thanks to you guys for making what we do possible, making it and really making the whole thing work, and look forward to hopefully seeing some of you and shaking some hands out there tomorrow.
It's cool running into listeners. Tyler, that I dropped my bike off with today, up on the plateau at a bike shop up there, listens to the show, and guy I worked with over the weekend named Jim, and he was talking about the wave and the guy that called in and how he was there, and he goes, you know, I remember it really well, but I was hammered, but I definitely remember it. So anyway, yeah, it's just always cool, and you love hearing it because you sit in the studio and you don't know if people are listening out there. But yeah, it's been really cool doing the 710 day every day. I will not be able to play golf, which is really a shame because you should see my swing, Danny. You have seen it. It's really horrible.
There's only one reason that I'm regretting the fact that you're not playing golf tomorrow, is that I can't relive or watch you shoot a lower score than Jim while only driving with the 3-wood.
Yeah.
Only teeing off with the 3-wood.
He doesn't take nearly enough heat for that for a guy who hosts the golf show.
It's true. It's totally true. We also have something. This is going to start next Monday. The contest is up on 710sports.com. 6 degrees of Danny Davenport. We put our pinheads together and we came up with a list of 100 names of people of varying degrees of importance and varying degrees of fame. And your opportunity here is that we want you to get one of those 100 people to call on your behalf. All they have to do is call in while we're on the air between July 16th and July 27th, a 2-week window. You call in during our show during that time, and if that person is one of the 100 people on the list, and we'll verify their identity, and they say they're calling on your behalf, we're going to end up picking the best, what we deem to be the best of those interviews as a winner. And you're going to get 2 season tickets to the Seattle Seahawks, which is a really awesome prize. Yeah. But more than that, it's a blast for us because you never know who you're going to hear from. The last time we had this, Chrissy Teigen called in from Paris with John Legend for someone she'd gone to junior high with, I think is what it was.
I think that he had gone to a dance, or I think she was joking that he broke up with her or something. So we were calling him a knucklehead for doing so. But you know what? I think that the contest this year is really cool, and I think it developed because of that. Because remember how great they were?
They were phenomenal. Oh. It was really fun.
And we're like, hey, can you put John on the phone? And he was happy. So that ended up being the best interview. So rather than us sitting here and rating who's the most important, significant person, it's who calls in and does the best interview.
And there are some that are really fun that are on here. Like my personal favorite is Yuji Okamoto, who is owned and operated a teriyaki restaurant in these parts. But he was also the bad guy in Karate Kid 2, which is a very important and seminal role. So he's one of the people that's on there. That should be one that's very gettable. Others, maybe not so much. We got Gabrielle Union, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Golden Tate, Ryan Stiles, Neil deGrasse Tyson. You can try and, well, reach out to these people directly. You can try and stalk them on social media. There's all sorts of different things. Hank Azaria is on here.
But
he has to call in character. He has to call in as Brockmire.
Yeah, we might have to have the beep button for that one if you've watched Brockmire.
Yeah, that if he does come in there.
Yeah, and I like the range too. So we all threw a number of these. I think you and Jess did the majority of this, but threw Jack Lambert in there, Vanilla Ice. Charles Barkley is in there. And if Barkley calls in, he might just be the hands-down winner as best interview.
He's certainly got the raw material there to work with. We've seen him bring the heat before. He's a fantastic guest.
Right. So, and then like a guy like Jack Lambert, he might not be good, but nobody's heard from him for forever. I never see him at any of the things. And I feel like if I'd gone up to him at any one point, like I thought maybe he might be at the Super Bowl, that if I went up and said, hey, I've had your poster on my wall, and I played linebacker also, and I just always looked up to you, that he'd look at me and go, get the hell out of here, kid. So, yeah, you don't know if he's going to be good.
Wouldn't you be kind of disappointed if he didn't take that approach?
Yeah.
That makes it all worth it, Dave.
Yeah, he folds his hands together on his chest. Oh, that's so special to me. Like, oh, my God, what happened to you, Jack? Yeah, so Chris Pratt, who's a local guy, Marshawn Lynch, Bruce Irvin, former presidents Obama and Bush, and Percy Harvin, which I know you snuck in there.
I put Harvin in there. I also put Eric Bedard in there.
You put Bedard in, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if Bedard's going to make it through a full 15 minutes. He might be just 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it might be five and dive, as was his MO here. Also put on Meghan Markle. She's here with Prince Harry. If you got Meghan Markle, my Aunt Candy taught her at Immaculate Heart down in Los Angeles.
Oh, now you can't participate.
I'm ineligible.
Yeah. Right. You could get Aunt Candy there. How about this? What might be the sleeper here? Maybe not a sleeper. Tonya Harding. That might be a really interesting interview. And I figure if you mix Jim Moore and Tonya Harding, especially, that like Jim might ask, he won't have any problem asking the really awkward
He certainly
questions.
Will throw. Yeah.
Did she use a three wood?
Yeah.
That was very good, Curtis.
What was the thickness of that pipe?
Yeah. It was there. What was his name again? Galooly Eckhart?
Jeff Galooly.
Galooly was the husband. Eckhart was the guy that did the whacking.
Oh, is
the
that
whacking
right?
stick. I believe that's correct.
Yeah. So, I don't remember Karate Kid 2 that well. Was he as villainous as the punk blonde-haired kid in
not
the first
quite.
One?
Not quite. And then they've remade Karate Kid. Have you heard? Or I guess not remade it, but they've got a new series out where it picks up.
Cobra Kai.
Correct. And it's the Zabka character, Johnny, right, is teaching a new group of people. But he's kind of the one who's become truer. He's no longer the evil villain who's instructed to sweep the leg and all of the other things. Like, it's Johnny's kind of the good guy. Is that right?
I believe so. It's on YouTube TV.
Oh.
That's when you know you're getting old, when they start remaking movies that, like, really? Already?
Yeah, Top Karate Gun's going to get remade. I want him to remake. Hurry up and remake Top Gun, though. I'd like to see that again.
That'll be a good one.
I don't know if Kenny Loggins is on here. He was one of the early people. Kenny G is, however.
Okay. Yeah. You know Kenny Loggins raised the 12th man flag one time?
Was that pretty fun?
It was really nice, fun interviewing him. Him, and I should have put on the list, too, Josh Lucas, who was another actor who's in, like, everything. And he was just the coolest down-to-earth guy. But, yeah, Kenny Loggins was good. So, yeah, there's some really good names, and this will be fun. Now, there's some on here like Ciara. I mean, that probably be a fairly easy one, I would say. Marshawn Lynch. Bruce Irvin, but it doesn't matter. If Ciara comes on and she's a fantastic interview, tells us some stuff about, you know, Russell leaving his dirty underwear laying around or something like that, I mean, that might be the best interview.
Two questions here. The first is, who would you most like to hear from? If you could get, is it Lambert? If you could have a magic wand and one of the people on this list calls in, who would you like to hear from?
George W. Bush is on there. Charles Barkley. And really, Tonya Harding. I mean, that might end up being, you know, because like Bill Walton's here and we kind of know what the deal is with Bill Walton. But yeah, I'm going to go with Jack Lambert.
I think my choice would be Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah, the author of the first hip-hop tape that I purchased, Swoss. In Ashland, Swoss. Oregon. Yeah.
Remember that was, did that stand for something? Because I remember them using the word Swoss.
I believe it was just their term of cool, looking suave.
Right.
It was Swoss. I believe there was a song about, don't you wish your boyfriend was Swoss like me.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember one time Kid Sensation came out to the bubble out in the Kirkland facility.
Yeah, I met Kid Sensation a time or two before.
How about Larry, who's the white guy? People think he's funny.
He is a real estate investor. He does make a lot of money. And I believe today is the 30-year anniversary of Posse on Broadway coming out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's it mentions Dick's Burgers, whole thing.
We're brought to you by Venue Kings. We're going to find out what we've learned. We'll do that next.
Wow. You sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It's time for us to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. C-Raj.
Yes, Danny.
What's going on?
Not much. That point you did it with the ding wasn't very emphatic today.
You know,
it
like
wasn't because it's just him and I in here in the studio.
Yeah, it's true.
He does it when he's got Jim over there.
Jim's ready to go
somebody
watch
to
his boys.
At.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy ran off to watch his twin boys play.
Yeah,
Mikey and Stevie.
Down in Kent.
They got the playoffs going on.
There's a boy from Kent.
Yeah. It's a kid from Kent.
Kid from Kent.
Kid from Kent. I do want to say this. Jim took his first shot at C-Raj. I don't think we'd seen that before, right?
Yeah, no, he's usually got my back. But I appreciate it.
He even used his smarmy imitation voice about while reading your tweet.
Yeah, but he ripped you as part of his article, right? In the Kids at Daily Sun. It's like, you should tell him, Jim, get your own material. And write about somebody else. Don't use me for your...
Get my name out your mouth.
There you go.
As Bobby Wagner once said.
Here's the other thing, is that somebody tweeted back to Jim. It said, Jim, I agree with you, even though Curtis is my son.
Yeah, that'll be my dad.
That's hilarious.
Your dad sold you out.
He did.
I told C-Rod, you said you're going to ask him whose side are you on, and that his dad may respond this way. Jim never cost me a dime.
What'd we learn, C-Raj?
Well, we learned today that our transitions could have been better.
Salvador Perez was probably looking forward to a weekend off. Instead, he's going to have to go contend with spider crickets in D.C.
What'd you find out about spider crickets?
Well,
they look like spiders and they make noise like crickets?
Yes, it looks like what happens if a spider and a cricket got together.
They actually spin webs, Jim, instead. That's the variation.
I had a bird poop on me this morning. Yeah, it was just bizarre. I was sitting out there doing show prep. I was sitting there writing and you know, doing, you know, studying up for our show today. And this, you know, probably a crow. I thought, well, that's probably a pine cone. I told Dave about it, and I looked down, and I was like, yeah, no, it's actually bird poop. I don't know what that has to do with spider crickets or Salvador Perez.
Was that cut, or did that all go together?
That's how it happened.
Yeah, that is exactly how it happened.
All right. That's our show.
I don't know if I've ever been pooped directly on by a bird. No, I have. Yeah, I remember. I remember now. I was out on a golf course and I got one drop. Yeah, it's...
Hasn't everybody?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Really?
I have not been hit by a bird.
Living
yet.
A charmed life.
I know.
Crows, take note.
What's up, Brian?
I got hit at Safeco Field. I was in some of the seats in the upper area and there was a bird that was in the rafters. And I was sitting there and... From 40 or 50 feet above me, just splat right on my knee.
You know that they're up there laughing at you,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I looked up, and there's just a bunch of them up there, and I'm shocked that it hadn't happened before.
Thinking it's really funny.
My in-laws, who have been here the last week, which has been awesome, my mother-in-law loves to feed birds. Like, she used to carry, like, a little, like... packet of bird seed in her purse, and it drove my wife nuts, like where she would just always yell about it. Like, don't do it. They're going to poop on me. God, I hate it. It was always one of the more entertaining things.
Was she trying to put it out on your deck and stuff?
Yeah, just different. It was never at our house because at that point she had yielded because Sharon would get so mad. But it was like, yeah, she would. It was like, it brings your mom happiness to feed these birds. And my wife had none of it.
I heard that sometimes people will do that if there's a certain bumper sticker of, say, a candidate that they don't like on a car, that they'll go and put bird seed all over the top of the car.
Well, that's an interesting strategy.
Good.
Yeah. So they bring the bird over. Oh.
I read somewhere the guy who got that done to me, he's like, you know what? I have to admit, that was a pretty good one.
We also learned today that rocket science is not the way to get Dave off the couch.
Remember I told you my girlfriend down at Stanford, she's like, wanted me to do rocket science in the off season. I was like, she's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, well, I'm going to work out and get ready for football. You know, that's all I want to do. And that's
no
kind of how
crossword puzzles, Dave. You're not.
Well, I did the jumble, Danny. Tried to keep sharp mentally, read some books, but geez, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it's downtime, and same thing after football. You just kind of. My wife actually had to prod me to get a job after a while. After I retired, I was like, well, I didn't retire. They did. And I was like, oh, I'm actually pretty happy here just hanging out with you guys and the kids. Well, I think you need to get a job. You need to get out of the house. She was right. That maybe portrayed my wife in a bad light there.
No, I thought it made it clear that you were being lazy.
Okay, good. Well, that's exactly what was happening.
She was accusing chestnuts of being lazy. That would be there. Yeah. No, it's... Absolutely.
Well, it was about Jay Cutler because Jay Cutler said, I'm trying to do nothing. Like the opposite of doing something. That's what I want to be. And he just wants to be lazy. I was like, oh, I can relate to that.
It'd be a real challenge if you had as much money as you needed for the rest of your life about what exactly how motivated you would be about things.
Yeah. I think it takes a while, though, because what I did was I ended up going to work at Merrill Lynch. And so my first thing was to study for the Series 7. And I got so into that. And it was like, I don't want to be too dramatic, but like I felt like I was alive again, you know, like I had something to work for. Because when you retire, it's just depression, man. For me, it was. It was just like a part of me died. And then, you know, I'd start doing that. And so you kind of need to do that. I think you could only be lazy for like a year. Maybe a year. That's about what it was for me.
Somewhere Jim is shaking his head, disputing
that. Yeah, imagine his motivation once he retires. Wow.
Well, he'll probably do the Bark podcast,
yeah,
maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe not.
Well, we also finally learned today that we know why Jim wants every team to have an all-star. Tigers relief pitcher Joe Jimenez is on this year's All-Star roster.
Yeah, we didn't need to have him, probably.
No.
2.85 ERA for Jimenez, 45 strikeouts.
He's not their closer, right? He's
no,
a middle reliever.
He's a reliever. I think it's interesting that Jim's part of the generation that wants to do away with participation trophies, but he wants to give one to the Royals and the Tigers and the Orioles and all these other franchises.
How do you know I'm against participation trophies?
I can see it in you, Jim.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
He's
that's right.
That's
the only kind of trophy they'll get over there.
If we went by a straight meritocracy, Washington State would have been like relegated out of the Pac-12 long ago.
Really? Really? You're going to go that far?
Maybe.
Man, you two just hammered Jim there.
C-Rodge got in the really destructive uppercut, though. I didn't realize how devastating that was until we just heard it again. Well, so it's the only trophy they'll get.
I had to get him back for him ripping me in his column.
That's true.
Yeah, C-Rodge has got a little bit, I would say, I can relate to. He'd go for the jugular.
Yeah.
You get punched in the nose, you punch back.
Yeah, exactly.
I made a joke one time on text about C-Rodge, and he brought my mother into it. It's like, wow.
Oh, yeah, that's
holy
right.
Holy smokes.
That was the group text.
Yeah. Yeah, jeez. Hey, Joe Jimenez? Why is he not Jose Jimenez?
I don't know.
It's just Joe.
Just Joe. Yeah.
All right. I'd have gone with Jose.
Jose?
If I was him.
I always thought that the Mariners for a while, and he was most well-known with the Cleveland Indians. He blew a World Series for them. Jose Mesa? I was like, he should have come back as Joe Table. Like, after he blew the World Series game, he should have come back and, like, Jose Mesa is no more. I am now Joe Table. That's going to do it for us. We are going to hopefully see some of you out there tomorrow at Druids Glen for 7-10 Day. I want to thank John Clayton for joining us. C-Rodge, our producer. Brian was on the board. And for the three of us, thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.